Welcome to Generation Zedia, a podcast where we talk about the media that affected our childhoods. Today I'm joined by Katie Langley, the Associate News Editor for the Quinnipiac Chronicle. I'm Arts and Life Editor Ashley Pelletier and your host of Generation Zedia. Today we're going to be talking about Twilight. First released in 2005, Twilight by Stephanie Meyer set a wave of young girls and women onto reading. Twilight spawned three sequel books and a five-film franchise that changed how we view fandom and the things women enjoy.
So I never read the Twilight books as a child or ever, but my mom did, and she read the books with, like, her little group of mom friends from the neighborhood, and I remember that they would all just get together and talk about it. And that was kind of my first experience. And then I only ever watched the Twilight movies maybe about a year ago. And I remember it being one of, like, my first dates, which was weird, with my current partner. We watched Breaking Dawn Part 2.
You didn't watch the other ones?
No, I had watched the other ones by myself. Just, like, because were they recently put on Netflix or were they?
So, yeah, they were put on Netflix in July of 2021.
Yes.
And then they were taken down in January.
So, like, I watched them in that span, like, over the summer. I did, like, two in one night or something because I watched it and I was like, this is ridiculous. I love it so much. And then I, like, was like, hey, do you want to watch a Twilight movie with me? And for some reason, she's still with me. but yeah, that's kind of my experience with Twilight. I love the movies. I've never read the books, but I think that the movies are a cinematic masterpiece.
Yeah, so like you said, I didn't really interact with Twilight a lot when I was younger. My best friend from elementary school read it in fifth grade or something like that. And she, like, told me the plot, and I was like, I don't care. And then, obviously, we saw on the news all these women freaking out over Twilight. And it, like, became, like, a bad thing to like it. Like, I feel like a lot of people judge Twilight fans. And so I stayed away from it. I actually bought the books probably in high school. Didn't read them. I just had them somewhere. And then I found them during winter break of 2020, 2021. And I was like, why don't I start reading these? So I read the four books, and I was like, you know what? I'm actually obsessed with this a little bit. And at the time, there was really nowhere to watch the Twilight movies. And so I definitely legally watched them online. Please don't look at my internet history. And from there, I was like, kind of obsessed with it. Like, I found Twilight TikTokers and stuff on social media. The Twilight Twitter and TikTok accounts are actually very active if you follow them, despite having been 11 years since the last movie came out. Then they came out on Netflix and everyone validated me because now everyone else liked them and was reading Midnight Sun, the prequel, or like the edition of the first book of Twilight from Edward's perspective. And I kind of ended up being the Twilight beat reporter for the Chronicle because one of my first articles this year, I wrote about how Twilight was having a little resurgence. And I wrote about how, like, people were finding it again and they were learning to criticize the things they hadn't before. And then there was a podcast in January called The Big Hit Show that covered Twilight from the perspective of, like, the people who made it and stuff like that. And so I've written two articles about Twilight, which is definitely above average of articles written about Twilight by anybody. So kind of going back to, like, criticizing the media that we love, I think Twilight is one of the greatest examples of you have to be critical of what you're consuming because it's very problematic. Stephanie Meyer was raised in the Mormon church, and you can tell in the books. And I know you mentioned that to me when we were talking about doing this. So do you want to talk about that a little bit, how you could tell it was Mormon?
I don't know. I haven't done as much research on the subtext of Twilight as Ashley has. But I think that you can tell when you're watching the movies.
Yeah, so basically, Twilight is an allegory for the Mormon church, if you look closely. And I have credit to the people on TikTok who have, like, explained this in length, so I know this. I don't just know a lot about the Mormon church. So basically, Bella is an outsider. She is not a Mormon, but she meets the Cullens, who are very strongly meant to be the Mormons, particularly Carlisle Cullen, the head of the Cullen clan. He is meant to be an allegory for Joseph Smith, who was the founder of the Mormon church. And the whole series is kind of Bella, like being so dazzled by Mormonism that she can't help but be attracted to joining it. And you see it particularly with her relationship with the Quileute tribe, the indigenous people who are used by Meyer in the novels. They are meant to be like the outsiders, the bad guys. Not the bad guys, because they end up teaming with the Cullens in the end to protect Bella. But it's very much that they are meant to be like the bad choice, as they are very violent, and they're meant to be Lamanites, which are like the opposite of the chosen people to Mormons. They're supposedly cursed with dark skin, which is super racist and problematic, but it's definitely an interesting case study with Twilight, looking at the religious aspects of it, because it's not completely like what we expect, because it's very pro-choice in a way.
Yeah,
like it's all about Bella choosing. She is not forced to make a choice on her, like she's not forced to choose one way or the other, Edward or Jacob, or to keep her baby Renesmee or to murder it before it murders her.
Not Renesmee.
It's a very empowering book, and I feel like that's like why a lot of young women were attracted to it, because it's not a choice that is forced on you, as I feel like a lot of young women feel like they're forced to make certain choices in life.
Now, I don't know if you know about this or not, but the whole her not being able to have sex with Edward, because won't it kill her, or like before she's a vampire?
So Edward was born in the early 1900s, late 1800s.
Yeah.
He dies of the Spanish flu in 1917. And so he is very much old fashioned, and he says so himself. And he wants to wait till marriage for them to.
But is that also like a Mormon, like wait till marriage thing?
I believe it's part of it, as Mormons are very abstinent, if you mm-hmm. will. And but it's not just that. Like there's double plot reasons for it. Edward is very concerned with protecting Bella's soul, because he believes that he is damned to hell as a vampire, and he doesn't want that for her. So obviously he wants to save her virtue on one hand, but on the other, he is incredibly strong as a vampire, and he worries that he will kill her because he won't be able to control himself. And we see that in Breaking Dawn, he literally breaks their wedding bed, which is kind of insane to me. I kind of want to talk a little bit about how, like, people judge Twilight fans. Like, did you ever see, like, growing up, like, the people who, like, made fun of Twilight fans, or, like, were like, oh, they're bad? Yes.
Yeah, I think that it was that generation of, like, crazy girl fans. Like, I think of it like, you know, these are things that preteen girls chose to be interested in, whether it was boy bands or books or Twilight, and they were so criticized for it. And when men and boys choose to follow sports teams and put their posters all over their rooms, they're just excited about something, while girls are crazy. And I think that just shows just the inherent misogyny in how we treat young girls and how we treat the things that they love, and we make them almost ashamed to be excited for. And that's why I love the Twilight resurgence so much. As much of it as it's been kind of a joke and kind of something that's funny, it's also like, yeah, we're not afraid to say that this is something that brings me joy anymore.
Yeah, I totally agree. And like you said, like, we don't value the things that young women and girls value as a society. And that is very apparent in the making of Twilight. I know in the Big Kid Show podcast, hosted by Alex Papademos, just a little name drop there, he interviews the people who were making the first Twilight film. And originally MTV had the rights to create that film, and they decided that they couldn't keep it from close to the source material because young women wouldn't make them money. So they decided to make the script geared towards teenage boys who are very much not the target audience for Twilight. And so that first script, which has not been found, unfortunately, I would love to read it, involves like a boat chase scene where the vampires like chase Bella down a river on a boat. And like it involves Bella shooting them with shotguns, which isn't how that works at all. And it's like crazy compared to how the Twilight film came out once Catherine Hardwicke got her hands on it. Because it is so close to the source material. Like, there are moments that you miss in the from the books, but the book is 400 pages long. Obviously, you're going to have to miss some of that. But it's still, like, one of the closest adaptations I've seen in books to movies.
And I think that there's something to say there about a female director directing a book that was meant for a teenage girl audience.
Yeah, Catherine Hardwicke did an amazing job. She definitely had a specific vision she wanted for it. She's a very artistic director. But if you'll notice, after the first Twilight film, after they made all that money on the first one, they're all directed by men. Men immediately scooped up Twilight after Catherine Hardwicke did such a great job with that first film. Melissa Rosenberger, I believe her name is, she screen wrote all of the films, but so like there's still that female voice, but men directed all the other ones. You lose that artistic value that Hardwicke brought to it, like the blue filter over the Twilight, the first Twilight film. Like the music score isn't as Twilight as the first one in the other movies.
And the best scene, the baseball scene.
I love the baseball scene. It is the most influential sports scene in all of cinema, and I stand by that.
I love the way that the vampires run. I think that it's hilarious.
Have you seen how they made that? They have, like, a little treadmill that they're running on that moves, like, it gets attached to a car or something like that. And there's a video, like, they're, like, strapped on, and it's, like, literally, like, a square of treadmill. And it's so funny to watch them do that.
I think that they went so hard on the baseball scene. Like, for what? I don't know. But I think that it's excellent.
The only scene, I think, in the Twilight films that goes as hard as that is the scene of Alice's vision at the end of Breaking Dawn Part 2, where we see the big battle between the Volturi and the Cullens and the werewolves. And that didn't happen in the books. So, based on what I've seen and read about that premiere of Breaking Dawn Part 2, people were screaming and crying in the theaters because it didn't happen in the books. Because right away, like, at the very start of that scene, Carlisle Cullen's beheaded by Aro Volturi.
Yeah.
Which is an absolutely insane thing to do. And I think that's a really interesting thing they did, because that's the only, severe deviation from the books in all of the saga. And I think that made it interesting for the fans, because, like, with Harry Potter, like, everyone knew what was going to happen if they read the books. Like, they knew that Voldemort would die. Well, obviously. But, stuff like that. Like, they knew exactly what was going to happen, bang for bang. And then the director of Breaking Dawn Part 2, whose name is escaping me, he said, you know what? We're going to give him a little surprise. We're gonna do something we haven't done before, and I think it worked.
I'll just say that scene scared me, because I am a Carlisle fan through and through. I love Carlisle, and I love Alice, so.
No, you know what killed me? Is when Seth, the youngest Quillute, dies in that scene, and his older sister, Leah, sees it, and he starts howling, and Jacob can, like, because the werewolves can read each other's minds in werewolf form, so he knows what's going on, even though he's running away with Renesmee, and it's so emotional, and I cry just a little bit. So, going off of me talking about the Quileutes a little bit, the Quileute tribe is a real tribe in the Pacific Northwest. They are actually in the town, they're just off the town of Forks, like they are in the books, and they do have an origin story relating to wolves, but it is nothing like what Stephanie Meyer writes in her novels. And she bastardizes their stories and their name and makes them into these violent people who are hot-headed and don't think before they act. And the leader of the pack in the books, Sam, his woman that he imprinted on Emily, he viciously attacks her in a moment of anger. He like phases into a wolf and the entire half of her face is scarred. Mm-hmm. And this is their leader in the books, and it is blatantly racist. And while she made a poor choice there, she also made a poor choice in the Quidditch Trap has not seen any funds relating to Twilight. They've received no money. They have gained tourism from people going out to visit Forks and La Push, but ultimately these people go and they disrespect their culture because they don't understand that Stephanie Meyer completely made it up. Like, she pointed at a place on a map and she was like, oh, they have an indigenous tribe? I'll make up some story for them and they can be animals. Mm-hmm. Like, if you look at that, it's wrong, plain and simple.
Yeah.
And while we can love these stories all day long, like, I love Jacob as much as he imprinted on a baby, which is another issue that we don't need to get into at the second, but these people are real, and you can't just take their stories and change them for your own purposes. Like, I can't look at my ancestors from France and just make up complete random crap about them and be like, this is the truth. And when people start to believe me, be like, oh no, I never said that. Like, it's not the truth. Like, it's people are so misled by Meyer's story, and it takes away from the Quileute's actual experiences.
Yeah, and I think it can potentially be so harmful to the community that's there, because I mean, I know that there's been a super big push with, like, in Forks and within the Pacific Northwest to get Twilight fans out there. And here is an autonomous tribe that never asked for this. and I think it's very problematic. And I think that the almost othering of Indigenous peoples as something almost animalistic, and, you know, of Jacob as the character that she was never gonna choose. Like she was never gonna end up with him.
He even goes so far as to, like, kiss her without her consent.
Yeah.
And, like, he threatens to hurt Edward when they, like, a lot, actually. And he doesn't respect her choice.
Yeah.
Whereas Edward is always very respectful. Like, when he finds out that Bella kissed Jacob in Eclipse, he was like, if that's what you want, that's what you want. Like, it's just another way of lowering Indigenous people by making your main character, who's Indigenous, do something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Do we want to have the Renesmee talk? I think we should have the Renesmee talk.
I think we should have the Renesmee talk.
First of all, I never call her Renesmee. Renesmee, for those of you who do not know, is the child of Bella and Edward, who is half vampire. It is a combination of Renee, Bella's mother, and Esme, Edward's mother's names. And I hate it. It's the worst baby
name
I've ever heard.
It's the worst name I've heard in my life.
So I think it's a funny joke for on TikTok and a lot of other places to just say random words.
Ravioli.
I've seen ravioli, rigatoni, like many pasta names, actually.
Yeah.
But so basically, Jacob wants to kill Renesmee because she is killing Bella from the inside out during the pregnancy. And to get out of that, Miss Stephanie Meyer decided that Jacob would fall in love and imprint on the baby. And while they describe it as not being in love,
they say it's not technically falling in love.
Yes, they say it's not technically falling in love, as it's whatever the person who is imprinted upon needs. Like, so during the books, he's very much seen as an older brother figure. They say very clearly that at some point it will become romantic, because they can't help but be attracted to the attention they receive. And first of all, what? This baby is, like, literally minutes old at that time when he falls in love with her. And to, like, try and make it better, they age her up really quickly. Like, by she is 3 months old by the end of the novel, and she looks like she's, like, 8.
Yeah, she does.
And she's...
Isn't she, like, fully standing?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. She can stand at, like, days old.
Yeah.
And it they say that she'll be a finished growing by the time she's 7 years old in human years. That doesn't mean that it's okay for... He is 16 in the books.
Yeah.
It's not okay for a 16-year-old to fall in love with a minute-old baby. I don't think that even needs to be said. Like, it's just a fact. And they set it up in Eclipse when his friend Quill falls in love with a 2-year-old. And so, like,
I remember
this...
that.
It's not in the movies.
Oh,
so it's in the
okay.
That's you, kind, you see it in the movies, and, like, there's a scene with them playing soccer on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And, Quill's with the little girl and the waves. And, like, you don't even see their faces in the scene. It's very quickly. But, like, they set it up in the books. And this was... So, okay. You may not know this. But originally there was only supposed to be 2 Twilight books. Twilight and what was called Forever Dawn. It was a very rough draft. She ended up scrapping it later on. Renesmee and Jacob being a thing was always in there. It was never not a part of the plan.
That's scary.
Because she needed a way to tie up the love triangle.
Yeah.
And what better way to do that than have Jacob fall in love with Edward and Bella's baby? Yeah.
Completely unrelated, but related to Renesmee, probably the worst weird CGI baby I've ever seen.
That's not a CGI baby.
That's a real baby?
Oh, are you talking about in the movies itself? I thought you were talking about Chuck Esme.
What?
Oh, God. I didn't realize that you
what
didn't know.
What are you talking
okay.
about?
So, when they were making Bella's baby, because it grows very fast, they didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
So, originally what they did was they had an animatronic baby called, who has now been dubbed Chuck Esme, like as in Chucky.
Yeah.
And it was like a wax baby or something like that, and it's so cool. Hold on. I'm going to show you a picture. Okay, so this is Chuck Esme.
Oh, no, that's what I was talking about.
That's not CGI, that's real.
Yeah.
And so they have this baby. And, so it's now in, a museum in Forks. But it's melting.
Oh, my God.
The baby is melting, and it keeps, like, the, like, box it's in, like, the display case it's in keeps getting opened. And it has, like, dirt on its, like, socks and dress that it didn't have when it went into that museum. So people think that Chuck Esme is actually haunted.
I mean, with that face. They could be.
It is a face. I'm so glad what they did with the movies. Because I think it, while it wasn't great, like, obviously you can tell it's a CGI baby in the movie. Which they actually used, like, some crazy number of child actors for Renesmee. And they just put, Mackenzie Foy's face on it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It looks so much better.
Well, it looks better than Chuck Esme.
Well, yeah, I think that's a low bar to cross, though. I think, like...
Yeah, no, I have seen Chuck Esme, but I didn't know that story.
Yeah, it's, one day there will be no more Chuck Esme.
He'll be melted.
Apparently, like, it's, like, shiny now. It wasn't shiny before.
Gross.
But it's in Forks, if you ever want to go see it.
I would love to go to Forks.
Me too. I think, so, okay. Forks, if you don't know, is a very small town in the middle of nowhere in the Puget Sound of Washington. And it is the second wettest town ever other than Aberdeen, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's like a logging town. Like, it's very much, like, rural, like, everyone knows everyone type of town. Until Twilight happened, and people would just show up to Forks, Washington. And so, basically, while there is the, like, original industries the town had, it very much relies on tourism now. Like, people go take pictures with the Welcome to Forks sign at the edge of town. Like, their one, like, corner store has, like, a Twilight gift shop in it. And there's actually, like, a route where you can take a Twilight road trip across the Pacific Northwest because... Nothing in Twilight was actually filmed in Forks. It was filmed in, like, other places in the country. Like, the Cullens' house is actually in Oregon, outside of Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, there's this whole road trip that people take, and people go to Forks every year for what's called the Forever Twilight in Forks Festival. Mm-hmm. And people go, and they cosplay, and they have a good time. It's like a weekend, and sometimes they have, like, I know Peter Facinelli, who plays Carlisle, was there this year. Like, people spend their time in Forks, and it's such a weird thing. Like, you see it with other series sometimes, but, like, I feel like Forks is the only place that, like, made its name on a book series.
It's just such a weird place to set a series. And I think it's just, yeah. It goes along with the whole, like, grungy aesthetic of Twilight, of just, like, setting it in the Pacific Northwest and having it always rainy, and the movies are tinted blue the entire time.
That's only the first movie.
The first one has a filter on it.
Interesting fact, Stephanie Meyer had never been to Forks when she wrote the books. No, she lived and I believe still lives in Arizona, which
that's
obviously
very
is featured in the first Twilight book.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, she'd never been there. I believe she's been there now at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But she had never set foot in Forks, but I believe she really did just point at a map.
She just took a guess.
I think she just picked a place that was, like, going to be dark or cold and rainy all the time. Mm-hmm. It was like, Forks? Perfect. It really is just, like, insane that this stay-at-home... I believe she was a stay-at-home mom. She had, like, at least 3 children at
really?
The time. Yeah, she was a mother when she wrote Twilight. This mom created this million-dollar, like, several millions-dollar franchise, and basically revived the reading movement for young women. Because at the time, Harry Potter was obviously big at the same time, but it was for kids. Like, the older people, like, really weren't supposed... It wasn't acceptable for older teenagers and women to be reading, like, the Harry Potter books. So this is where they found their reading renaissance, which I think is really interesting, how the early 2000s were kind of like this big moment in reading. And we're starting to see it again with these movies coming on Netflix mm-hmm. and all that, because people are reviving their love that they had for reading as a child. And I know I have done that. Like, I haven't been reading as much this year as I did last year, but I've been consuming so much, like, so many books and stuff that it's been this great transition from, like, being, like, appreciating all these things from my childhood and then coming back to them later and being like, oh, maybe these aren't as good or as I thought they were, but they're still as valuable to the culture.
I definitely had a moment like that with, I was super into the Hunger Games as a kid. And so, like, when the world shut down, I went back and reread all of them and watched all the movies again. And I was like, there's so many things I didn't understand about this when I was little. Like, this is such, like, a metaphor in a metaphor about the world.
Yeah, and I think we obviously don't have that perspective with Twilight because we didn't consume it when we were younger. But I think it's really interesting to watch the people who did go through their moment of realizing, like, there's this woman I follow on TikTok. Her username is @TwilightTalk, I believe, if you want to go watch her videos. She, like, goes through the books and, like, points out these little tiny things that people don't remember. Like, she did a series on, like, outfits that they're wearing in the books and, like, finding pictures of, like, what they'd actually look like. And it's insane. Like, Bella has the worst fashion sense of any teenage girl I've ever seen.
Although I do think that her fashion sense in at least the first movie is so funny.
The movies aren't like... Okay, so in the meadow scene, when they go and they're in the meadow and Edward shows her how he sparkles in the sunlight, they're both supposed to be wearing khaki pants.
Why?
White button-down cut-off shirts, like, without sleeves. That's just one example. When she meets the Cullen family for the first time, like, when she goes to their house, she wears an ankle-length khaki skirt and a blue polo shirt. I believe it's polo shirt. It's something, like a business casual shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And Edward calls her indecent Because she's wearing the floor-length khaki skirt and the blue business casual shirt.
What? It's like, that's so funny.
No, it's...
Well, because I thought, like, the bowling shirt in the first day of school scene...
It doesn't hold a candle to, like, the books.
I thought that that was wild because that's, like, one of the first times we meet her and she's just wearing, like, a bowling team shirt that looks like she bought it at a thrift store and is wearing it, like, ironically.
In Stephanie Meyer's world, she's wearing that completely on her.
Yeah. I did not know about the khaki floor-length skirt.
Yeah.
That's a fashion move.
It really is. And the movies have those moments, too. Like, all the wigs. Have I complained to you about Twilight wigs before?
No, I don't believe so.
So, in the first movie, I believe everyone has their natural hair. Mm-hmm. To an extent, I believe. Don't quote me on that. After that, because, like, they're all late teenagers, early 20s. Like, they're changing their hairstyles and stuff. So they have to wear wigs for a lot of it. Like, and I think one of the worst wigs we see is in Eclipse. Bella's wig is so bad. Like, her hairline is literally straight across her forehead.
I'm Googling this.
Their hair is just all mess. All mess all the time.
Oh my god, yes, of course.
I'm trying to think of the bad wigs. There's definitely some.
Was Jacob wearing a wig?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How could I forget? So, the second...
I guess I didn't really realize there were wigs at the time.
The wigs that Jacob wears, the first one is atrocious. Because yeah. It's like a middle part, and it just goes straight down.
And then he has, like, the hair behind his ears. And
yeah,
like,
it looks terrifying. He looks like, you know those dogs that, like, look like a curtain?
Yeah,
he looks like one of those. His hair looks like one of those. And then the second one, he gets a little bit better because he has his hair up and it's like what looks natural, but it's still not great.
I don't like what they did to Jacob. I don't like that he was like a teenager in the first movie and then they made him into like a full man.
No, so they do that in the books too.
Yeah.
So he's 14 in the first book.
And he's younger than her.
He is several years younger than Bella. And
he looks like a kid in the first movie.
He does. Because he's meant to be. And then once he starts, like, getting his werewolf genes mm-hmm. activated, he shoots up to, like, 6'6".
He's, like, ripped.
He's
got, like,
shredded.
A
12-pack. They basically say he looks like a 25-year-old man.
Yeah.
And that's his excuse for being able to lay it on thick with Bella, because he looks like a fully grown man. Did you know... Okay, this is completely unrelated. The Twilight books only take place in a year and a half.
Really?
Yes. Okay, so the first Twilight book...
So, like, does she give birth when she's, like, 17, 18?
No, okay. So, she's 17 when she moves to Forks. I want to say January. She first talks to Edward in March. They start doing their thing, they might start talking in February, and then they start talking more in March. And at the end of the first book is prom, which is in May or June.
Mm-hmm.
And then New Moon jumps to the end of that summer to the start of their senior year of high school. And then Edward leaves for, like, 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, like, maybe, like, March or April of their senior year. And then they graduate in Eclipse.
Yeah.
They get married that summer in August. She's pregnant by the third week of August. She gives birth in September, like 2 days before her birthday. She's turned into a vampire that very day. And then by Christmas of that year, the Volturi attack and the book ends. It's literally like not even...
Such a wild couple years.
It's not even 2 years. They're not even in a relationship for, like, more than 6 months when they're married. And half of that, he's been gone.
Yeah. I really want to talk about the scene in, I don't know what movie it is, I'm sorry, but the one where he leaves for the 6 months, and then it's literally just a time lapse of her sitting in the same chair for 6 months.
Yes, this is in New Moon.
Yes.
Yes. What about it? What do you want to talk about for that scene?
What was that like in the book?
Like, so basically what happens is Edward leaves. And then the next page says November December. It's like literally just like they're blank pages.
It's just blank pages.
They're just blank pages. And then they come back and they're like, I want to say February. And she's still in this like catatonic state. Mm-hmm. And she's having these nightmares. And Charlie stops coming to get her because she's having these nightmares every single night. And that's when he's like, you're going home. Like, I'm sending you back to Arizona to live with your mother. And she's like, no, I'm staying in Forks because what if Edward comes back? And he's like, well, then you need to do something with your friends. And she goes out with her friend Jessica, who is played by Anna Kendrick in the movies. Mm-hmm. And she discovers that if she puts herself in danger, she'll see Edward's face, yes, like, in her mind talking to her. And so she decides, I'll build these motorcycles with Jacob, yes, my friend who I've been abandoning for months. And when we ride them, I'll see Edward's face again. And that's how she starts building her relationship with Jacob. It's so, like, it's such a weird sequence. That fact that she's so hollow when he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's weird because in the books, he leaves no trace that he's ever been there. Like, he steals all her photos of him and his family.
Oh, that's wild.
And, like, even the radio in her truck that they replace at the beginning of New Moon. And that he puts them under the floorboards of her bedroom. And so he's like, I couldn't take them away from you, but I had to hide them. So she thinks that all her memories are gone. And they're just sitting under her floor.
God, poor Charlie Swan.
Team Charlie.
I'm Team Charlie above all. Poor guy. Like, imagine your daughter. I would also threaten him.
Honestly, the only time I'm not Team Charlie is when Jacob kisses her against her will. And Charlie's like, good for you, kid. In the books that he's like, good for you.
Yeah, because Charlie likes Jacob.
Charlie likes Jacob because he's friends with Billy, Jacob's dad. Okay, so Katie, we've talked a lot about the highs and lows of the Twilight saga. Is there anything else that you want to add?
No, I think that's everything. There's a lot.
There is a lot. And Twilight has clearly made a huge impact on our generation and the generation before us. So this was the second episode of Generation Zedia. I'm your host, Ashley Pelletier. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Katie, for coming to host this with me this week. And be sure to look out for our next episode.